do not think. And remember what to think means. To think all over again, yes. Every time you start thinking, think about everything afresh, yes. As if you had never thought of anything before. It is my first rule in thinking, for myself, yes. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the last example, which very shortly was discussed at the end of our lesson on the law of interdependent origination was, remember, well, a person killed somebody, yes. What the hell does it mean in terms of the law of interdependent origination? No. In fact, that very fact that a person killed somebody has two aspects. One aspect in terms of the law of interdependent origination is that he killed because what of his what ignorance, because he was bloody darn stupid, yes, as 99% of the world's population are. He was absolutely ignorant. But there is a second aspect, which are well, the main thing, that the second aspect is that he killed somebody not only because he was ignorant, but also because he had what? The thought of killing somebody. And probably it was the first time in the history of humankind that the Buddhist masters of old, yes, offered such a strange philosophical proposition. If there could have been no killing without the what? Thought of killing. No murder without the thought of murder. Then what is more important? The physical act of killing or the thought to kill? Tell me frankly, do you understand that question? And the Buddhist masters of old answered that question quite unequivocally, in an ambiguous way, very simply. Of course, thought. That is thought, citta, or mind, manas, or consciousness, vijnana, that matters. Not the physical act of killing. Because a physical act of killing may occur, what?
By accident.
And as we learned from the first example referred to by Edward Conze, yes, that fact of killing is in itself two-sided, because it involves a person who kills and a person who is killed. Yes, who is killed. So, let us return to that problem. What is more important? And now we know the answer. That's okay. That's very simple. So, the only thing that matters in our relation of any fact and any event of human, animal, divine, or any other history, or of no history at all. Yes, that evaluation must start with what was the thought of it. It is a very, very interesting thing. So, thought. Ladies and gentlemen, you know that in a way the problem was very relevant and constantly remained so during the last 400 years of European history of philosophy. And even today, a lot of learned, highly learned, million times more learned than I, psychologists and philosophers from Harvard, yes, Yale, you heard of those honorable places, yes, no, I have not yet asked you to stand up, all of you, and start applauding, yes, but still, Oxford and Cambridge, they discuss, they argue about what is primary, mind or matter. And of course, Hegel said, what? Thought, idea, mind. Marx said, matter. From the point of view of Buddhist philosophy as well as from the point of view of my own philosophy, the very alternative is absolutely uninteresting. What does it mean? What is primary? Try to think about that. Because the very word primary implies what?
Beginning, or
in the final analysis it implies time, ladies and gentlemen. So one after another, or another after one. And in the Buddhist philosophy, in terms of the law of interdependent origination, time as such simply does not figure. Because all conditions are acting, what? All the time. Simultaneously with their effects. Please, to remember that. And that was said by the old Buddhist philosophers living somewhere from the, no, probably 3rd century BC till the 3rd century AD. And that idea was echoed by God Almighty 2000 years later only in the modern theoretical physics, where that idea of simultaneously acting efficient factors became predominant. Simultaneously, that is in the sense of nothing before, nothing after, yes? When one is a condition of another, it doesn't mean that one is before another. You got it yet, no? Yes? Frankly, it takes a lot of thinking. And in a way of unusual thinking, we are, which is not habitual to us. So, okay. So let me pass to one of the crucial formulations in the Buddhist philosophy, which figures at the very beginning of probably the most famous Buddhist text translated into more than 100 languages, yes, only in English. It was published, well, sort of, at least in 35 editions. The text is called what? The Dhammapada. Heard of it? Yes, you may buy it for 75 cents. In any second-hand bookshop. A very little book for simple people. Catechistic book. You know what catechistic means? Like Christian catechesis, yes? Which is meant for simple people. As simple as, say, farmers, barmen, millionaires, prime ministers, and other, usually, non-thinking persons, yes? Normal people, ordinary people. But one of the peculiarities of Buddhist philosophical texts is that even when we speak to the simplest people, almost illiterate, we have to speak what? The truth. And after that, it is their business to understand or not to understand it. So, in such a simplest book as the Dhammapada, the first line is very difficult for understanding. Let me quote it, yes. I repeat it all my life, each and every day. All phenomena of the world are mental. All phenomena of the world are thoughts. It is understandable, yes? If one acts and speaks with evil thoughts, then the misfortune will follow him forever. Then, all the dharmas are mental, are thoughts. If one acts and speaks with what? Good thoughts, happiness will follow him forever. So the main thing is not what one speaks or acts. You understand it? But what thought is conditioning that is all the way there, yes? Synchronously. His speech and his acts, yes?
But part of the, like, the right path,
yes.
The
yeah.
Right words. And so, but do they not matter?
But the thing is that right action is reduced in the first place to right thought coinciding with this action in time. Not before, not after that action, but together with. You know, in order to understand Buddhist philosophy, you have to a bit change your understanding of time. Because that synchronicity, that is, the principle of at the same time, yes, is absolutely dominant in Buddhism. Condition of something is that which what coincides with that something in time. Acts on it at the same time, not before, not necessarily before. And where from the greatest importance in the Buddhist theory of time of what? The present time. My lady, is it very difficult to understand?
Fully.
Sorry?
It's very difficult to understand fully.
No, fully? Then let me tell you in all frankness, I do not understand it fully. I cannot pretend to understand it more than superficially. Though there was one great English, sorry, not American, but it doesn't matter, astronomer, probably you heard of him, Eddington, heard of him, who said, that I understand completely about that Buddhist idea. In a way, he was a very Buddhistically minded person, as probably was another great astronomer and physicist named Jeans, yes. So, now you got it. It is mind that matters, yes.
I have a quick question about the time frame.
Yes.
If the time schedule isn't specifically like, this happens, then this, then this, then this.
Yeah, it may happen too. But the problem is whether or not that which happened the day before yesterday preserves its what? Conditioning force.
Okay.
Because let us imagine such a situation that it was it figures in some of course much later Buddhist texts. when one Buddha, not this Buddha, there were, you know, the number of Buddhas is, according to the Buddhist philosophy, what? Innumerable. In principle, innumerable. Because, not to speak of the fact that each and every sentient being, in one way or another, can be regarded as a potential Buddha. One Buddha was asked by one of his pupils more or less the same questions. But what about the events which definitely took place? That's what they say, at another time, yes. And they condition you. Or shall we put it in a bit different way, because it's a very difficult point. Because conditioning not only means that which is a condition or that which conditions something else, yes, but it also conditioning means the other side of that. That is, whom is it conditioning? Understand that. So the Buddha, that Buddha, not the Buddha Shakyamuni we are talking about, shall we say, not the Buddha the teacher, which will be referred to as the Buddha, but and all other Buddhas will be referred to as a Buddha or one Buddha. There was one Buddha, yes. And that Buddha answered the pupil, you know what? You know what? Yes, in one of my previous reincarnations, in one of my previous reincarnations, I killed 200 kshatriyas, warriors, 200 brahmins, and a couple of, or another of gods into the bargain. Then what about your karma, asked the pupil. And the Buddha explained, what? But I had already got rid, very long ago, yes, of what? Of all karmic factors. That is, I am not any longer subject to the law of interdependent origination. I'm not conditioned by my past good and bad actions. All my actions had become long ago neutral, indifferent, yes? And you may say, how can it be? How can it have strength with respect to what was before? That is, quite a quirk, yes? Quite a twist, yes. But ladies and gentlemen, philosophy is not a Washington Post sport column, yes. It is indeed difficult, because in such instances, that which can be put in time as being after may affect and influence that which had already taken place before. Yes, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, it's quite all right. I'm wondering about the timeline, and then what you were just saying is things in the past affect your karma.
Yeah.
But if everything's happening all at once,
yeah,
could future things affect your karma?
Exactly. Shall we say now, to be on a safer side, not affect my karma, but affect a lot of things. Okay, including, or shall we put it in a bit different way? You got it, by the way. Yes? Shall we put it like that? So now, provisionally, I mark you at something between A minus and B plus. Yes.
Okay.
For your question, yes. We may say that, now listen, in terms The formulation is that in terms of the Buddhist philosophy of thought, or of thought mind and consciousness, well, for brevity's sake, let us call it philosophy of thought. The correlation of causes and effects in time is in principle indefinite, because it depends on too many factors. While in our world outlook it is absolute, yes. It may be of one kind or another, but it remains absolute. Because our time is, as you aptly remark, is unilinear. One directed in как бы, but in one line is unilinear. Why? The Buddhist concept of time is not unilinear. Difficult, yes? Now, the question is, why is that so? And one of the answers to this question, only one of the answer to this question is that because all dharmas, shall we say, all appearances, all facts of mind, or all thoughts, is very difficult or possible. Please do interrupt me if you don't understand something. I'll simplify it. All thoughts are momentary. All dharmas are momentary. As I told you 10 days ago, you remember, that is all units of thought. Dharma is in a way unit of thought. And time as such is a kind of word. Time as such is a secondary to and derivative from those momentary units. There is no time outside the momentary outbursts, flashes of dharmas, one of which is equal to one thought. Yes? That is probably the first reason. But there is also let me reformulate the first reason. Because that is what we call time is in fact. It is in fact the billions and billions and billions of flashes of thought or mental activity called dharmas, only in plural. In this sense, the term dharma is used only in plural. Yes. Dharma in singular is used only in the sense of what? The teaching of the Buddha. You remember? Yes, I spent half an hour on explaining the three main meanings of the term dharma. Yes, sir? Only louder, please.
Once someone has reached enlightenment.
When
you're no longer subject to the law of interdependence interdependent origination.
Not you, not me. Not you, but a Buddha.
A Buddha.
Yeah.
Then is he no longer subject to the constraints of time?
Absolutely so, sir. Yes. Oh God, another between A minus and B plus. God, good mark to you. Good, good. Absolutely so. Practically one amounts to the other. Not subject to conditions of the law of the interdependent origination is a tantamount to saying not subject to the constraints. Okay, now?
But the Buddha...
I am expecting now one other question, quick.
A Buddha also appears to, like, ordinary people in time.
Oh, well, Now, in terms of that conception of thought and mind, in terms of that conception, you know, again, it is, what does it mean, ordinary people? Now I have to explain it to you, because I may well forget it, to do it in future, yes. Because we are all interested about ordinary people, yes. Yes, I do not know why. I'm not, yes. I simply confess, I know too well, you know, an ordinary man, myself, yes. And I got bored with knowing myself, nothing interesting. So, let us think about extraordinary people, you got it now? Why? I'm so reluctant to discuss. What about the ordinary people? I know myself, I am one of them, yes. A boring, yes. Boring proposition, my lady, yes. Look somewhere else, please, for something remarkable, yes. Now, you know what is very, very interesting? That, forget about people, any sentient being, or any living being possessed of what? At least one organ of senses. But let us forget about one organ of senses. We are not dealing now with amoebas, yes, or young baby octopuses, yes, which are very tasty in Chinese restaurants. No. We are speaking of those who have how many? Six organs of senses, that the five plus mind, yes. And then I may formulate that addition to the idea expressed in the first line of the Dhammapada about thought. That each and every thinking being is the most ordinary thinking being, yes. The most ordinary imaginable thinking being, the most primitive thinking being. Each and every thinking being is at the same time, first of all, a being which can, by strenuous yogic practice, transform his thinking from ordinary into a special yogic thinking. More than that, each and every thinking being is at the same time a being which may not only transform his or her or its thinking, but go beyond that transformation and go beyond any transformation of thinking and achieve the highest state of nirvana. That is why our term of ordinary people does not apply here. Does not apply here. Because our term can be very easily reduced. We say, he is quite ordinary man, which means that I know something that he doesn't know. Yes. I can know a lot, and he is, well, quite ordinary. Yes, yes?
What is the Buddhist account of knowledge?
Sorry?
What would a Buddhist account be of what we call knowledge? Or what it was referred to as knowledge?
Please, repeat it a bit louder.
What would the Buddhist account of what we call knowledge be?
Oh, splendid. Oh, God. Now, it is a very good question. Not yet Marx, yes, but good question. Yes. Now, ladies and gentlemen, try to think about that, about my answer to this question, and remember it. Knowledge is, in Buddhism, is by no means the same as what we have to think of these two words as words of our everyday language. I can sit and think. I want to know, yes, the origin of the universe. According to the Buddha, it's absolutely useless sometimes, because the universe has no origin. Yes, but let us say, I'm sitting down thinking, oh, well, what is the origin of the universe? Yes. Oh God, one day, 1 week, 1 month, 1 year, 1 lifetime. So the whole lifetime was devoted to thinking. I may think like a hell. No knowledge? Yes. I may only but 2 moments thinking about the origin of the universe, and then as a telephone call, oh, how are you, chap? Old man. By the way, let me tell you, finally I've established what the origin of the universe is, huh? And I got it from somebody else by telephone in 1 minute. They are two totally different phenomena, because knowledge can be gotten in terms of results. You understand it? In terms of results. Oh, that's it. I know that the velocity of light is not any longer what? The constant. Oh God, thank you very much. Well, okay, see you tomorrow, yes. At that idiotic party, yes. Okay, goodbye, good night. Yes. So, origin thinking are two totally different things. Knowledge is an intentional work. The thinking is an intentional work. I want to know that, and that is why I am thinking about that. While knowledge can be communicated to you, yes, can be shown on that idiotic telegram, yes, can be told, can be stolen by spies from another state, yes, can be falsified, yes, can be sold and resold, because about knowledge we think almost always in terms of final results. Oh, now I got it, yes. While thinking is very often thought of by us as a kind of what? Intentional process. And that is why, let me tell you about two philosophical consequences, very important in terms of Buddhist theory of thought and mind. The first is that the time of achieving some knowledge, yes, is always but indefinite. I can take 1 year and not achieve it, I can take a silver and go to the norm, is indefinite. While the time of thinking is, shall we say, far more definite. What I'm doing, chap? Oh, I am thinking. That is, and the second consequence, very, very important. The second consequence is ethical one. In fact, you cannot blame me. Of course, you can if you want. How come, Professor, you do not know what the origin of the universe is? Yes, I won't be ashamed of it, because it is outside the ethics. My God. Well, am I answer, such is life. I don't know. But if somebody blames me, you did that because you did not think about its consequences. In this sense, we may say that knowledge as such, as a final result, is not subject to ethical evaluation. Knowledge may accuse of not thinking, and more than that, the last point before we go. A very, very small point. Important, particularly in the Buddhist schools of the middle of the first millennium, in the Buddhist philosophical school. namely, from knowledge, from your knowledge, you cannot make any conclusions about yourself for thinking. In some cases, you may conclude from some thinking about knowledge. And that is how it was formulated in Buddhist texts. Of course, the Buddhist knowledge of the past, present, and future time of all sentient beings cannot be used to anything. Sometimes it can, but not in the case of the Buddha, because he had ceased long ago to be subject to the law of independent arrangements, more or less. And the final point. No knowledge can be interpreted, understood, and explained in terms of thinking, because thinking is a different plane. What? A different plane? I don't remember it. You cannot say your knowledge is ego. It would sound trivial. Yes. Your knowledge is, your knowledge is not. Yes. Any mathematical cannot be evil or, but you can say your thinking is evil. Intend to get or your thinking is good. Want to see the very final moment. Also of course with respect to relation of thinking knowledge philosophically, thinking, if we think about thinking of knowledge of Buddha, strictly terminologically speaking. Yes.
So conditions that have to be met before knowledge.
Sorry?
Conditions that have to be met also before knowledge even.
Of course. Knowledge, if you are not.
Yes.
Is. And is conditioned by that. But again, illusions. Your knowledge, often your lack of knowledge, is one of the consequences. Universal condition in terms of the essence of the law of origination through minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be again at your disposal. Gradually, yes.